Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Hardwood Paroxysm. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall, and we're here to talk about the Orlando Magic for today's season preview podcast. And to help me talk Orlando Magic, I'm joined by Philip Rossman-Reich, the editor of Orlando Magic Daily. Philip, how are you going?
I'm doing good.
It's good to have you on. You're well versed in all things Orlando Magic. Where can everyone find you on Twitter?
Best place to find me for Magic thoughts, at least, is at O Magic Daily. That's O Magic Daily. That's exactly how it's spelled.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any other way you could spell that, but O Magic Daily.
You'd be surprised. It's the internet.
Yeah, that's true. Let's get right into it, Phil. We're going to talk Orlando Magic, and they're a team that I have a ton of affection for because it seems like there's so many players on this team that I can classify as my guys. I like way too many of them, and in fact, they're all put on the one team that they all get squashed for minutes. Well, let's talk about the team as a whole. I think it's pretty obvious that they got better this offseason. Would you agree with that?
I think they got better just by adding a coach like Scott Skiles to the mix. As much criticism as people have of Skiles and kind of the way that his coaching tenures have developed, there's no arguing he produces results. His teams become good teams. They become playoff caliber teams. And, you know, Jacques Vaughn was kind of a patch on the back guy just to keep guys confident while they were losing a lot of games. He never became a coach that could help the team win games. So I think just by having a coach that's a little bit more serious minded, that's going to hold them accountable, is going to make them, if not significantly better, certainly more respectably better.
And that's one of the major reasons they got better. There's a ton of internal improvement with all these guys because everyone is young on this team. Basically, there's no real veterans, and that's good and it's bad. But as these guys all mature and get things together, they're all going to do it together, and they're going to be this really tight bunch of guys around the same age who should all come into their primes around the same sort of time. The Skiles one, you're right, there's been criticism of it because there's the talk that he can't, you know, he wears teams out really quickly. But even if he does that, I think that he's good for a big improvement for this team. And I've said it before on some of the other shows that I wouldn't be shocked if the Magic were really in contention for that eighth playoff spot. Do you think that's too lofty an expectation?
No, I don't think that's too lofty an expectation because, like you said, there should be a lot of internal improvement with all the young guys that they've got on the roster. I think everyone's kind of expecting Victor Oladipo to make a little bit of a jump up. Tobias Harris obviously got paid now, so there's a little bit more expectation from him to produce a lot. Nikola Vucevic has been a double-double machine, just very solid. When I look back at last year, it was a 25-win season. I say, you know, a lot of the individual players got better. They just didn't get better as a collective unit. And so the trick now for the Magic is you've got all these really nice players that a lot of, NBA geeks like us really, really, really like individually. It's just how do you make them better as a team and as a unit? And, you know, from a fantasy perspective, what does that do to their stats is another question entirely. But it's going to be interesting to see how this team comes together as a unit. Finally.
That's obviously Skiles' job, and I think that he'll be able to do that. Now they've got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of young guys. They don't necessarily go. They're not molded in the way of like the Boston Celtics are, where they've got 10, 12 guys who are all decent role players. They've got a core of like 6 or 7 guys who should be getting the bulk of the minutes, and that's really good for their development. It's also good for fantasy as well. The guys they added this year, they're more veteran guys like Jason Smith and CJ Watson to provide backup minutes. So Watson will play some backup point guard. Jason Smith will back up the 4 and the 5. But they're not guys who are going to eat into the development of the younger players. They're going to be there to help guide them and to help tutor them, basically. But you're not going to see Jason Smith going out there and demanding 25 to 27 minutes a night. CJ Watson. Everyone hopes not. CJ Watson's not
really, Willie Green got like 15, 20 minutes last year. And as consistently as I think he played, there's certainly a lot of frustration among the fan base that he was getting minutes ahead of a guy like Maurice Harkless, who's no longer with the team.
The Willie Green situation was the second most baffling one to me in the NBA last year, behind Ronnie Price starting for the Lakers. Now, you'd be familiar with Ronnie Price's, I'm going to say basketball talents, but they're pretty limited from his time in Orlando. But the Willie Green one, you touch on Mo Harkless, and he's one of the guys that left this team. the fact that he was just completely eliminated out of the rotation last year, and the fact that Kylo Quinn was basically missing in action for most of the season was baffling to me, because those guys I thought were showing tremendous, tremendous potential. Mm-hmm. O'Quinn, especially the year before when he'd started that big chunk of games in front of Vucevic and actually pushed Tobias Harris to the bench for a big chunk of the season, he was looking really good. Harkless was showing great talent as a perimeter defender, and he basically just never saw the court. Ben Gordon was getting minutes. Willie Green was getting minutes. It made no sense to me.
It made no
whatsoever.
Sense. And I think it made no sense. And I think I was, you know, ultimately one of the contributing factors to Jacques Vaughn getting fired at the end of the day was, you know, that there was a point in the season where winning wasn't going to happen anymore. And they were still playing these veteran guys that weren't going to be part of the team's future. I mean, when the Magic signed Ben Gordon, it was a 2-year, $9 million deal. It got kind of slammed for the amount, but because the second year was completely unguaranteed, I think everyone who looked at it saw that this was really just a 1-year deal. If, you know, he was able to provide anything off the bench, he'd be a solid producer for this team. It would be worth the investment almost, and then they could discard him after a year if they, you know, needed to. It wasn't anything big, but the fact that he was still playing ahead of a guy like Maurice Harkless even late into the season was just kind of strange, especially if the Magic were trying to boost up Maurice Harkless's trade value if they still wanted to get rid of him. It seemed like there were some other things going on that didn't have to do with basketball, but Harkless's confidence was just kind of shot, and it was clear by the end of the season that no matter what the Magic did, they needed to kind of find a new situation for him, even with a new coach.
Well, Harkless, they gave him away for basically nothing. I think that was a steal for the Blazers to get him for that sort of price. I think he's much better than that. And even O'Quinn going to the Knicks on that $16 million for 4 years is a steal for what he's going to be able to do for that team. Not that he was ever going to be able to start ahead of Harris or Vucevic moving forward, but he's great insurance policy, much better insurance policy than what Jason Smith is. But look, O'Quinn wanted out because of the way he was treated last year as well. I don't think that he would want to stay in that situation where he'd shown so much promise and then was just disregarded. And like, well, no, we're not giving you minutes. We're going to just completely bury you on the bench and give you nothing. The other two guys who came and went, Shabazz Napier came across in a trade, which was an odd move in my opinion. What were your thoughts on the trade? Look, he's a first round draft choice from last year. He was came in with a lot of hype. He struggled a lot for Miami. Seemed to come out of nowhere. Do you like the addition of Shabazz Napier?
You know, I'm still like kind of figuring out exactly what it was from a transactional standpoint. They pretty much got the same deal for Napier that they got for Harkless. So in essence, they traded Harkless for a pick they're never going to get, and then traded a pick they're never going to give up for Shabazz Napier. So you get a really talented player. Obviously, what Shabazz Napier did in college made him a first-round pick. They made him a player with some value. The Magic needs shooting, so Napier definitely fits there. What really confused me is they used a second-round pick on Tyler Harvey, and now I'm not quite sure Tyler Harvey's going to make the roster at all as a second-round pick because Napier does what Harvey does. And then the question becomes, do the Magic even pick up Napier? Not to get too much into contract stuff, because I don't know if that's necessarily a focus here, but the question is, do the Magic even pick up Napier's option for his third year? Could they just turn him into a free agent and just, you know, waste away the roster spot almost?
It's definitely in doubt that they pick up that option. That's something that people who are in sort of deeper dynasty leagues need to pay attention to, because Napier's a guy that people would have had some high hopes for last year. There was talk of probably uneducated talk, but talk of him resting the starting job in Miami away from Mario Chalmers or Norris Cole. That was never really going to happen, but people might have invested some sort of deeper dynasty picks on Shabazz Napier, and there is a big chance that he is without a team at the end of this season, even though he's still got 2 years to go on a potential 4-year rookie deal. So he did struggle at times. He showed some glimpses, but again, he's going to be behind CJ Watson, who they brought in most likely. He's not going to leapfrog him for the backup point guard role. Watson is still a really useful and very, very handy backup point guard and first guard off the bench.
And with Hezonja capable of playing the two, I can see the Magic playing some two point guard lineups with Watson and Payton playing together, because Watson is a better shooter than maybe what the Magic have. But with Hezonja and Fournier there, I kind of find it hard that they'll do very much of it. So it's difficult to find minutes for Napier unless someone gets hurt.
Yeah, he's going to be insurance for those guys. The other guy that they lost in the offseason was Luke Ridnour, who what teams do you play for now, Philip?
I think he's currently a free agent. I think he got cut.
I think he did. I think he ended up in Toronto and then they cut him. I think that's probably the last we've heard of Luke Rynow. But he was on what, four teams in about 48 hours, and now he's currently waiting.
One of those contracts.
Yeah, everyone just wanted to include it in deals because it was very financially beneficial for those teams. Let's talk these young guys though. So we want to look at guys who were drafted in the last couple of seasons. There's a stack of them, and there's a lot of talent here. We've already mentioned a couple of the names. There's Alfred Payton and Aaron Gordon, two lottery picks from last season. Mario Hezonja, another top five pick from this year. And there's a couple of second rounders, Devin Marble and Tyler Harvey, who you mentioned. And Marble had a stretch of a few starts last year where he was really active defensively and got a lot of steals, but he doesn't really project a huge amount. Now, unless I'm missing something with Marble, do you think there's anything with him going forward?
I think he's going to be fighting for a roster spot as well this year. The Magic signed Melvin Edgem. He formerly of Iowa State. He played in Italy last year. He played decently in summer league. He's kind of more of a gritty small forward guy, like more of a 3-4 type forward, a little bit undersized to play the four. He played really, really well for Canada this year during the Pan Am Games and during the during the FIBA Americas Championship. And just looking at the way the Magic roster is coming together, he seems like kind of a Scott Skiles guy. Like he's going to do a lot of gritty work. He's going to be willing to play defense. Not that Marble isn't. Marble, I think, is perfectly capable and willing to play defense too. But I think there's the potential that Edgem beats Marble for a roster spot because Marble's contract's still non-guaranteed. So there's still some. I like Devin Marble a lot. I think he does provide some of that grit and some of that, kind of defensive athleticism without necessarily a lot of with still some developing offensive skill. I think he's probably a better offensive player than Edgem in some ways. But, I think it's going to be a training camp battle to watch for that, kind of 14th or 15th roster spot between the two.
I think the player that most people want us to really talk about when talking about young guys, though, is Mario Hezonja, the fifth mm-hmm. overall pick. He actually had a pretty good game over in Eurobasket yesterday. I don't know what the time zones mean, but whatever the last game was that he played, he had a pretty big game. Now, he's a guy that when I look at for fantasy value, he probably projects as having some good value at some point in his career. The problem with him, though, is he plays the two, or he plays the three. And the problem with the Magic is they've got Victor Oladipo that plays the two. They've got Tobias Harris who's going to play the three. So he's currently being drafted at pick 143 in fantasy leagues at the moment. That is way too high because I can't envisage a situation where he gets enough minutes to be relevant. I think he's going to struggle to top 20 minutes this season. Can you talk me out of that?
I really can't. I think Hezonja is going to have his moments. He's going to have games where he comes off the bench, hits, three or four threes, and you just kind of let him ride. And he's going to, put in some highlight dunks here and there. But I think for the most part, the Magic are going to try and bring him along slowly. They're going to, kind of limit his role a little. They're going to kind of limit his role a little bit, just get him comfortable with the physicality and spacing of the NBA game. Because I think that's something that a lot of, as successful as he was in Europe and he had some games like that in Europe, there's still just a difference between the NBA game and even European professional games. So I think they're gonna kind of bring him along slowly. They're gonna bring him off the bench. So that's already gonna limit his minutes. He's gonna be playing behind Victor Oladipo. He still has to kind of learn the NBA 3-point line. I think that was something that he somewhat surprisingly struggled with a little bit during summer league, was just kind of the spacing of that further back 3-point line. And I think it's gonna take some time for Hezonja. I think that the talent's there for him to do a little bit more, but I don't think you'll see him running a lot of pick and roll. I think you'll see him a lot as more of a slasher and spot up shooter coming off the bench. And so, maybe 20 minutes a game might be the over under, but I find it hard to believe that he's gonna hit that mark just because Oladipo's there, Harris is there, unless they're gonna play Harris at the four. There doesn't seem to be a lot of minutes there, but Hezonja could certainly force his way into the rotation. I definitely could see that happening, but it's gonna have fits and starts. He's gonna look really bad some games, and then he'll have one or two games where he just lights it up, just scores a lot of points real fast.
I think probably the biggest thing we're gonna see from Hezonja this year is if he enters the dunk contest, because I think that's gonna be his biggest opportunity to have prime time exposure or to do something that's worthwhile. Because along with competing with Oladipo and Tobias Harris and Aaron Gordon, who'll play some three, there's Evan Fournier, who you mentioned before, who I am probably number one fan of his in his fan club. he's still going to get minutes. I really like Fournier as a player. And they've got the liberty of bringing Hezonja along slowly. They don't need to rush him into a role because they've got these other guys here who are going to play that. And it might necessitate a trade of someone at some point, you know, moving Tobias Harris down, trading Aaron Gordon, whatever they end up doing. They don't have to rush into any decisions, and they can let him develop for one or two seasons. He might not be getting 30 minutes by next season. He might take until his third year until they work out exactly where he fits in the pecking order of all these guys they've got on the wing. And that's good for his development, but it's not great for his fantasy value. So I don't think there's a lot there. I think there's a lot, though, in Alfred Payton. Aside from him having the second best hair in the NBA, he is the definite starter at point guard. He's going to get a stack of minutes. He was super down the stretch last year, just putting up big numbers. He had two back-to-back triple-doubles in March. His shooting numbers started to get a lot better than what we saw earlier on in the season. He's never going to be a big scorer. He's never going to be a big three-point shooter. He's going to be an elite defender and a great passer and a really aggressive rebounder. And I think that he's in for a real big season. And Scott Skiles is going to do a lot for him, I think.
Yeah. He definitely knows how to fill up a stat sheet, which from a fantasy perspective, I think is pretty valuable. The one thing to always keep an eye on with Alfred is his jump shooting. It did tick up a little bit. I think he found a nice rhythm. He's really good at that, just getting into the paint, that little floater. Once he gets his shoulder square, he got pretty good at that. He's actually been working this summer with Aaron Gordon's shooting coach. And if you saw Aaron Gordon at all during summer league, things seem to be working out well for him. So the hope is that his jumper will come back, in training camp a little bit improved. I think it's still going to be a feeling out process with him. So there may be some hiccups from a field goal percentage standpoint with Payton. But obviously, even without a consistent jumper, with teams laying back off of him, he was able to get a lot of assists. Even without a lot of shooters, frankly, on this team, he was able to find a lot of assists and find a lot of opportunities to fill up those stats. I think with Skiles a little bit more defensive minded, there might be an opportunity to see some more steals. I'm not quite sure what Skiles' approach to steals are. I know some coaches think steals are not a valuable stat and not something guys should go after. But there's certainly the possibility with more defense that, there's more defensive, statistics for him to accumulate.
Well, we look at what he did in the last month of the season. He played 37 minutes a game. He averaged 11.5 points, but more impressively, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, 2.7 steals, half a block, but he shot 46% from the field and 73% from the free throw line. Now, he's probably going to find it hard to keep those sort of numbers up for a season, but I think we can expect an improvement from his 55% free throw shooting, an improvement from his 43% field goal, maybe only up a percent or two, but there was a point where you have to think that Alfred Payton was going to be a guy that if you drafted him, you're going to have to punt both of those percentages, and I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. His free throws are going to be an issue, but with that sort of improvement, he could potentially become a guy that's high 60s, high 70s. That's not completely crazy because he did start to show that improvement in the second half. And big rebounds, big assists, huge steal numbers, good blocks for a guard. And if those percentages stay solid, he's going to become a very, very interesting fantasy guy. Now, a lot of people seem to be on board with that because he's currently being drafted at pick 53, which is probably a little bit rich for where I'd like to take him. In a head-to-head league, it's not too far off, but in a roto league, it's way too high. But I think that he's heading into his second year. We could see a huge development from Alfred Payton under Scott Skiles. And for dynasty leagues, as he heads into Skiles, it's like second year. The next year, we're going to see a much bigger improvement again. What about Aaron
Plus Gordon? Another summer working on his jumper as well. I mean, if you watch summer league, it wouldn't surprise me if he starts off the season a little bit slow with his field goal percentage. If you watch summer league, he still seemed like he was feeling his way out with his new jumper. He wasn't quite confident with it yet. So there's still going to be a confidence that has to build with him. It wouldn't surprise me if he takes something of a small step back early. But like you said, he figured things out as the season went on and really finished the season very strong, very comfortable. So once he's comfortable, it's going to be very difficult to stop him.
He seems like a pretty smart guy as well, pretty switched on to what he needs to do to get better. Yeah. And that's always a great sign when you can hear people that understand what they need to do to actually get better in this league. Aaron Gordon came into the league extremely young, and there were a lot of knocks on him from the opposite of Payton, from him, from his basketball IQ. Superb athlete, but just a little bit dumb in a lot of situations. He took Summer League by storm pretty much. He was probably one of the best players over in the Orlando Summer League. He was able to do pretty much anything he wanted to. He was hitting threes, he was grabbing rebounds, he was scoring, he blocked shots. He did pretty much everything. He is pretty much earmarked for a starting role this year, I would say. I don't think they're going to be going back to the Channing Frye well again this year. I was quite critical of the Gordon pick last season. I didn't think that it was in their best interest, especially after signing Frye. But he's made me change my tune with what I saw from him, to even towards the end of last season, and then especially in summer when his shot looks completely different, which again gives us hope for Alfred Payton with that shooting coach. What do we expect from Gordon? Is he guaranteed to be the starter, do you think? Do we see 30 minutes? How big of an improvement can he take this season?
I think we'll see a significant improvement. I think a lot of his rookie season was derailed by the injury that he suffered. Yeah. It was like mid to late November, and not kept him out really till January. For a 19-year-old not to be able to practice even, I think was very difficult for his development. But we did see, like you said, toward the end of the season, once he got into a rhythm, once he got comfortable, once he got minutes, he was able to produce even at kind of the rudimentary raw level that he was able to produce at. I think I don't think it's a given that he starts immediately. I'm on the slow approach roll. I saw what he did at summer league. I was like, okay, there's something there. Let's see if he can do it during training camp. Let's see if he can do it during the preseason. Let's see if he can do it during the regular season before you throw him into the starting lineup. Obviously, if he's the best option at power forward, you put him in the starting lineup. I get kind of criticized by my fellow Magic writers. I kind of think Jason Smith might end up starting the season at power forward. But I think eventually it's Aaron Gordon's spot. And if not Aaron Gordon's spot, then it's Tobias Harris. He's gonna be in the rotation of the 3-4 throughout the season. I think he's going to get minutes. The Magic obviously invested heavily in him and using that draft pick, quite surprisingly, to be honest, on Gordon. And so they're gonna want to use him, and he certainly got the talent and capability to get on the floor. What his statistics will be, I'm not quite sure yet. I think they want to use him more as a kind of defensive stopper type guy, particularly on the perimeter. I kind of see the reason why I really like Gordon is I think he pairs really well with Tobias Harris, because Harris, I think, is better offensively as a four, but defensively as a three.
Yep.
And Gordon is better offensively as a three and defensively as a four. And so, I think they pair really well together on the court. What that means statistics-wise, I'm not quite sure, because, Gordon's still this kind of blank slate. No one really knows exactly what he's going to be in the NBA.
I think the thing that really stands out to me for Gordon is he is a guy that has the potential to be a triple one guy. And, Philip, when I say mm-hmm. triple one, something that I talk about, guys are going to average a one, like at least one in three-pointers, steals, and blocks. He can be that guy who gets you, he probably won't average a three-pointer a game this year, but he could get 0.7 threes a game this year. I think that's not too crazy, but he could be a three, a steal, and a block guy. There are only two guys that did it in the NBA last year, and both their surnames were Green, Draymond and Danny, but Aaron Gordon's got that potential, and that's where his value is. And another thing that I really liked about him is he came in being an absolutely horrific free throw shooter. At Arizona, he was dreadful, but he shot 72% from the line last year, and I was flummoxed that he was able to do that, but that shows a lot of, not necessarily character, but it shows a lot, I am working on something that is a big negative in my game, and sure. he did that, and then he's gone out, and working on his jump shot, and we saw his jump shot in summer league, it was different, it was completely different. He had so much confidence that he could bring the ball up the court and just take guys off the dribble and just start hitting threes in their face, and you go, who is this guy? Because this is not the guy that was drafted into this team. And to make two significant improvements in two off seasons, like the free throw shooting in the first season, the 3-point shooting and field goal stroke, that's obviously yet to be seen throughout the regular season, but it looks like it's on the way. That's a huge sign to me that he knows what's wrong and he's working at it. And that is paired with his athletic gifts. He could be a very, very interesting player for this team. And I'll take back all the harsh words I said when they drafted him. He's currently being drafted in the last round, pick 143, and that's absolutely fine. That's spot on. He could jump into the top 100 very, very easily. I don't currently have him sitting there because we just don't know at this point. But yeah, when you're picking at that stage in the last round, go for it.
At this point of his career, he's definitely a guy that you take a flyer on late in the draft. Because he has that potential to fill up all those stat sheets. You just don't know. You just don't know what the consistency is going to be yet. You don't know whether you can do it during the regular season, but we've all seen the potential. And so for a guy that can do a lot of everything, I think the Draymond Green comparison is perfect. I think the Magic are going to try and use him kind of like a Draymond Green, this utility knife player, particularly on the defensive end, And just like Draymond Green early in his career, whatever you get offensively from him is a bonus.
Yep, I think that's pretty much spot on. Now, I want to talk about breakout candidates. So guys who go from being good players to great players or irrelevant players to decent role players. The guy I really want to highlight here, Philip, is Victor Oladipo, because I think he is in for a massive season. And I don't think I'm alone in that sentiment, but I think that he is going to be huge. He was huge down the stretch, and we forget that he missed pretty much all of training camp and preseason last year.
Yeah.
And then with the knee problem, and then broke his face as well and had to come back from two injuries. Then he came back in, I think, mid-December, and then he has to get his legs under him. He has to go through his own sort of individual preseason for that time. But by the time we hit end of January, it was all Victor Oladipo. It was a completely different guy than what we saw in his rookie season, and he was on his way to becoming a dominant player, and he still might be a dominant player this year. I wouldn't be shocked. He averaged over 20 points for the last 2 months of the season, over 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.5 threes, almost 2 steals a game. He had his free throws up to 82%. His field goal percentage still 43%. That's still not that great. But everything else, he looks like an unstoppable animal at times, really. He's just like a ball of energy, a ball of muscle. And he's also a guard who's going to get you a stack of blocks. In the last 2 weeks of the season, he blocked 0.7 shots a game. So we're talking 5 or 6 blocks in the last couple of games of the season. He can do all that. They're highlight reel blocks. I think that Victor Oladipo is going to be a top 20 player in fantasy this year. He's currently being drafted at pick 36. I think that is a massive steal. If I'm in any drafts and I'm sitting in between 20 and 30 and he's there, I'm taking him. I think that he is going to be massive. He's going to be a guy that could be a 20-point guy, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1.5 threes, and that is just amazing value. And he's my dark horse tip for an all-star berth this year.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on there. We were watching his games late last season. You know, like he had the game against Houston where he, you know, scored 30 points. He had the 360 dunk at the end, which everyone kind of remembers. But I think that game for a lot of us that watch the Magic a lot, it was kind of the game where we were like, you know, he could be ready to make that turn, to make that kind of superstar turn that young players make. And that's when a lot of us started coming to believe that he could be the guy. Because this Magic team, frankly, they need one of those players to jump from really nice young player to superstar player, to, you know, potential superstar, potential, like, not MVP, but like they need a guy to kind of take the reins and be the guy that carries them home. And you know, there's certainly a lot of candidates in that. I think Tobias Harris and Victor Oladipo are the two guys, but Victor Oladipo, because of his two-way nature, because of his athleticism, because of just the way he can score, the different ways he can score, I think is a better candidate for that. You know, he can do some spot-up shooting. He's really good off the dribble. He's, you know, because they played him at point guard his rookie year, he's really good on the pick and roll where he can get those assist numbers. I don't think he'd have those assist numbers if they didn't try him out at point guard for, you know, a season and a half almost. Oladipo, I think, is that guy that's potential to take the leap. I think there might be some fits and starts. You know, I don't know if he'll get quite to 20 points per game, but like you said, he's able to fill up a stat sheet. He's going to get some steals. He's going to hit three-pointers because the Magic don't have any three-point shooters. So they'll be using him to try and spread the floor a little bit, especially if he can get more consistent there. You know, he can get blocks. He's a pretty good rebounder for a guard his size too.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of opportunities for him. I think they're going to put the ball in his hands and say, "You're the guy this year. Prove it to us."
I'm almost certain that's going to be the case. That it's going to be his team, and he's going to have a stack of value this year. Is there anyone else you see that is a breakout candidate, or is it just him? Pretty much.
You know, I think. I mean, obviously, this is a young Magic team, so there's the potential for a few guys to take a step up. I think Tobias Harris could take another step up. I don't know if he becomes kind of the all-star level. Certainly him, Oladipo, and Vucevic have all-star potential. You know, Harris averaged, I think, 17 and 6. There aren't many players his age. He's only 23 years old that have done that in an NBA season. You know, one thing that I think Tobias really improved on last year that I think a lot of us want to see him continue to improve on is his three-point shooting. He jumped up his three-point shooting. I can grab the stats in a little bit.
36%, I think. Did he?
Yeah, he shot 36% last year, particularly from the left corner. He shot really well. And if he takes another step up on his three-point shooting, that adds another layer of value to him. You know, if we're looking for a guy that goes from irrelevant to useful, I'm actually still a believer in Channing Frye. I think the Magic grossly misused him. I don't think they can put him with Nikola Vucevic anymore. But, you know, if you're looking for an end of the bench guy, if you need 3-point shooting, I do think Channing Frye is going to have a bench role and is going to be a guy that can, that puts up, you know, a decent volume of 3-pointers for a bench guy and makes them at a decent clip. He actually shot the second best 3-point percentage of his career last year, which I don't think a lot of people realize. So to me, that tells me the Magic kind of misused him. They didn't use him. They didn't hide his defensive deficiencies very well. And they really just turned him into a spot up shooter. They didn't use him in pick and rolls. It was kind of depressing to watch, and they had to bench him just because that's the way they were going to play. But if, you know, Skiles is a better coach, I think he'll find a way to get a little bit more value out of him if you're in a little bit of a deeper league.
Even last year, in the limited minutes that he was getting, he was still providing a lot of fantasy relevance because he goes out there, he'd only score like 8 or 9 points, but he'd get, you know, 1.5 of those as 3-pointers, and he'd go out there and you get a block a game. And it was still useful, especially just to stream in. I go, I want someone who's going to be a big man and hit threes, and there was no one better than Channing Frye. Jason Smith maybe cramps it a little bit, but he's still going to have somewhat of a role, and yeah, deeper leagues definitely can't ignore him. He's still going to have something there, and he could find himself in a bigger role than what we anticipate at some point this season. And when he does, his game is very fantasy friendly.
Yeah, and the thing, you know, even a lot of Magic fans forgot about Frye is Frye injured his knee as well during training camp, so he didn't have a training camp last year at all either. And I think, you know, maybe he was just looking for an excuse with the media, but he told us during during our closing interviews that it really did affect him, that it kind of knocked him off rhythm, especially coming to a new team. So, you know, maybe having a training camp, he kind of finds that magic that he had in Phoenix that had everyone kind of gushing about him and what he provided to that, you know, spunky Suns team everybody loved.
Yeah, exactly. That's such a big key, coming to a new team, trying to integrate yourself with new players, and then you have to sit out for whatever it was, 4 to 6 weeks that he had to miss with that knee problem. It definitely puts a dent in your own individual preparations and the way that your team is going to use you, because he's such a unique player that there was no one else on the roster like him, that they couldn't just put someone else in and go, we're going to run the same sort of plays and the same sort of offense and just, you know, slip Channing back in when he gets in there.
He doesn't have the same mobility, even if he has kind of the same shooting, you know, role for his size.
Exactly. There's pretty much no one like him in the league for what he does. So once he goes down, they have to adjust what they do, and that's when they're installing game plans and that sort of stuff through training camp, and he's not there. So that definitely would have had an impact. Maybe not a huge impact, but it would have had some sort of impact. Yeah. Now, when I look at this team and talk fantasy, talk sleepers, to me it's Victor Oladipo. Even though he's still got an ADP of 36, I still think that's too high. It's too low. I would be looking at him definitely below pick 30. Nobody else really stands out to me as being a real sleeper sort of candidate on this team. I think everyone else is going right about the right spot. Vucevic at 26, I think he's right about spot on. Payton at 53, Tobias Harris at 51. And then you got the late round flyer on Aaron Gordon at 143. No one's really, you know, going way later than what they should, in my opinion. But on the other side of things, when we talk about guys who are a bit overvalued, I look at Hezonja and I go, if you're picking him in the last round, I understand you're going for upside, but there is, unless you're banking on an injury, which it's impossible to do, you can't think, I'm picking someone because I hope that someone is going to get injured ahead of him. There is no way that he returns that sort of value, because he's just not. Look, rookies don't get minutes anyway. They don't get big minutes, and there's just no clear path to minutes, and you need to have a clear path to minutes when you're a rookie to actually go, well, we've got no one else. We're going to have to put him in where they've got plenty of other people. So to me, he is a guy that is tremendously overvalued if it's a standard redraft sort of league, because Hezonja is not going to, we touched on already, he's not going to get 20 minutes a game, most likely. He'll be sort of sitting in that 19, maybe 20 minute role. And it's just, yeah, people love rookies in fantasy, and it just doesn't work out.
Yeah. Everyone gets excited about rookies, and then they realize they're rookies.
Yeah, and it takes about 2 weeks, and we go, this guy's crap. He can't do anything. You go, that's fine. Yeah. He's 19 years old. Give the guy a break.
I think, you know, kind of along those lines, like, you know, Oladipo, I think, is a little bit more of a safer investment, because if you're in a fantasy league, you're kind of investing on immediate potential. Victor Oladipo, I think, is a risk worth taking, because I think the immediate payout is going to be good. Even if he doesn't become the superstar and just produces at last year's levels were still pretty good. They're still pretty good. If you're looking at a guy like Hezonja is a long-term investment. Like, maybe if you're in a keeper league, he's a guy that you invest in, saying, you know, he's going to develop. He's going to become this kind of player that's going to produce a lot of points for me. But don't expect a lot from him this year. And I think that's a pretty safe bet. Just as far as like kind of I've got maybe a one up, one down for you as far as fantasy value. When you sent me the projections, I was actually a little bit surprised Dwayne Dedmon didn't rank anywhere.
Well, because when I did him initially, he didn't have any sort of value on it. And then I went and looked at it. You know what? He's got to have something. So I have, since I sent you that list, I have gone and adjusted it. But he's still going to be I've got him projected at 12 minutes a game. I couldn't find where to put him because of the addition of Jason Smith. I don't know. Does that sound right to you? He showed flashes last year. I don't know what to do with him.
No, I think the thing with Dedmon is he is pretty much the only guy on the Magic team that's a rim protector.
Yep.
His issue is just kind of getting his athleticism under control. He commits six fouls for 36 minutes. So he's a guy that kind of, he blocks shots, but he flails around a lot.
Yep.
The Magic started him toward the end of last season just because James Borrego was looking for some added defense, and the Magic's defense was significantly better with Dedmon on the floor. So considering that Scott Skiles is a kind of defensive minded coach, I do think Dedmon's going to get minutes. I think he's going to get more than 12 minutes per game. Whatever minutes Nikola Vucevic isn't playing at the center, I think they go to Dedmon. I don't think they go to Jason Smith.
Okay.
Maybe if Greg Stiemsma makes the roster, maybe Stiemsma takes some minutes. And there's still also the potential of playing Dedmon with Vucevic like they did last year. As bad as the offense was with those two on the floor together, that was the best defensive lineup that the Magic had, to be perfectly honest.
He's a super aggressive rebounder as well. He's really aggressive on the boards.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of segues into the next point I had is, you know, if I'm a fantasy player, I'd be a little bullish on Nikola Vucevic. I don't know how much his numbers are going to improve. He's kind of settled in at that 17 and 10 or 11 rebounds per game. You know, decent field goal percentage. But, you know, if you play a guy like Dwayne Dedmon a lot more, if you play, you know, kind of a Aaron Gordon who's good at getting rebounds, they're stealing rebounds away from Vucevic almost.
Yep.
I wonder just how much better Vucevic, how much more numbers Vucevic is going to produce. I just kind of see him starting to flatline a little bit as far as his statistical production. And it's not a knock on him. It's not that Vucevic is a bad player. His numbers now are still pretty good. But I see a lot of other players starting to kind of chip away at his production because, you know, there's only so many rebounds in a game. There's only so many, you know, scoring opportunities and field goal attempts in a game. And if, you know, Oladipo and Harris are going to take a step up, if Aaron Gordon's going to take a step up, Vucevic seems like the guy they're taking stats away from.
Now, Vucevic is currently the best fantasy player on this team. I think he'll get overtaken by Oladipo, but I think you're right in terms of, I think his points and rebounds will flatline. But one thing I do think that we might see from Vucevic is we might see an improvement in his block numbers. Now, he's been poor in that area, like undoubtedly poor. He doesn't get blocks. And if you're looking to build a fantasy team and you're looking to punt blocks, then Vucevic becomes an extremely valuable center because so many centers get so much of their value from blocks, whereas he doesn't. He gives you those elite percentages, both field goal and free throw, good points, good rebounds. But I think that we could see a situation where he gets his blocks over one a game. Now, he did that in 2012-13, but I use it more as a thing, like a comparison. Well, maybe it's a little bit lazy because I'm comparing big white European centers, but Jonas Valanciunas took his block numbers up by about 0.4 to 0.5 blocks a game last season, and he is not a good rim protector, but he actually improved that part of his game significantly. Vucevic is on a similar career path to Valanciunas. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we see his block numbers come up significantly and hover at that 1 to 1.2 sort of range, and that just gives him an extra bump in that fantasy value. I don't think the points and rebounds are going to change all that much, but I think we might see some improvement in his block numbers. That's the only area that he really can start to improve, and I think that we might see it this season. I'm basing that on conjecture, but I think we might see him really improve that area, and that'll be fantastic for him. It'll also be fantastic for the Magic to have another guy who can do a lot of things, you know, offensively and grab rebounds and do everything that he does, but then go out there and block shots or not be a complete negative in terms of rim protection. If he can get himself to be a neutral, that's fantastic.
From a numbers perspective, that the trends do suggest that Vucevic is improving in that area. I think his first year at the Magic, he had like, his field goal percentage allowed at the rim was like 55% or something. Last year, he was down to like 52, 53%. Those aren't great numbers, but they're not, they're better. And so if he continues to improve, proving that, that's that space. The Valanciunas comparison is the one everyone gives. I think, you know, everyone was kind of saying Valanciunas needs to go get like Vucevic money almost this summer, which he did actually. Everyone throughout the season was saying, you know, is Nikola Vucevic better than Jonas Valanciunas? Like those are the comparables. I think just because of their age and because of the way they play. As far as racking up blocks, Vucevic is such a position player. I thought throughout the year when he was in position, he was a good defender, but he's more of a challenge the shot more than block the shot guy.
Yeah, that's
true. I don't think you're going to see him. You know, he's not going to be flying out of nowhere blocking shots at the rim. That's just not who he is as a player.
No, he's never going to be that guy. So, you know,
I wouldn't expect him to get much more than a block and a half per game for his career. But, you know, no one's going to keep track of this stat in a fantasy league unless you're in a really deep fantasy league. He's not going to bring down that field goal percentage. He's not going to have this great field goal percentage at the rim, allowed at the rim. Stat. He's not going to block shots there. He's going to challenge shots, and that's what's going to bring that percentage down more than, you know, actually, you know, that counting stat of blocks.
I agree with all of that. Let's talk about a guy that you think is limited by his situation. So that if he was to get, you know, decent playing time, so 30 to 33 minutes a game, you think that he'd be a real interesting fantasy prospect. You know, so when we see an injury happen, which are the guys that we want to look at? Is there someone that stands out to you in particular that if they got big minutes, they'd be really useful?
You know, I think Evan Fournier is that guy.
Ah, so do I. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about it. You said you're a big fan of his. Yep. I'm a big fan of his too. Last year was kind of a weird year for Fournier just because he had a lot of random nagging injuries. He played like only two games in the last 20 of the season or something like that with an injury.
Yeah, he had five in the last 2 months he played.
Yeah, those and literally those five games that he played, I think it was pretty clear the Magic were such a significantly better team with him on the floor. He's just able to create a lot more off the dribble. You know, he maybe needs to become a little bit of a better passer, but you know, he can get into the paint. He can shoot the three, which is a skill the Magic so desperately need. If he's healthy this year, I think he slots in as kind of the Magic's sixth man.
I think that's perfect for him.
I think he's going to be kind of a catalyst off the bench to allow CJ Watson to maybe play a little bit off the ball too, which is an area that I think CJ is actually pretty successful at throughout his career. So. You know, I think Fournier is going to have the ball in his hands a lot this year. If guys go down, if like, you know, God forbid Oladipo gets hurt again or Harris gets hurt, you know, Fournier is capable of filling in that position and getting starters minutes. And I think he'll produce in those minutes. He's a guy that, you know, he shoots the three pretty well. He can put up a lot of points in a hurry. I think his assist numbers could go up as he has the ball in his hands more and runs a little bit more pick and roll. You know, he's a guy that can fill up a stat sheet if you give him the chance.
Absolutely. I'm all over Evan Fournier. And people who have been listening to this podcast for a while would know that I'm a huge fan of Fournier. So he's the guy that I had written down for that as well. If he's in a situation where he gets 30 minutes a night, and we saw it at the start of last season when Alfred Payton was coming off the bench, yeah. And when Oladipo was injured, he was out there, he was scoring just – and at a huge, like really good field goal percentage. Like in some games, he'd go out there and have 50, 55% from the field shooting, hitting threes. Yep. He was doing a lot. And I'm a really big Evan Fournier fan. And he's a guy that as soon as if something, you know, I don't want it to happen, but if something was to happen to Oladipo and he slides in there and gets minutes, he's fantastic. In a 14 man league, you know, maybe 16 man league, he's going to have fantasy value this year with significant upside if he gets into that position of getting 30 minutes a night.
Yeah, another guy that you might want to, you know, kind of put an asterisk by as far as like getting 30 minutes a game, getting production, is Andrew Nicholson. Whenever he's been given minutes, he knows how to score.
He's such
that's all he does. I mean, he's not going to get you a ton of rebounds. He's not going to get you a ton of anything on the defensive end. But you know, you look at his career with, you know, Team Canada with the Magic. When they give him minutes, he makes three pointers. You know, you put him in the post that he can shoot there. His field goal percentage took a big nosedive last year. And I think his defensive issues are why he's not going to play. But if for some reason the Magic are forced to play him, he can put up points if you put confidence in him. You look at the way he finished the FIBA America Championship. I know that's not necessarily NBA competition, but you know he can put up 20 points very quickly just because he's able to step out and hit that three. He's got a decent jumper. If he can get some timing back on his post game, that's really where he's valuable around the basket. So, you know, again, I don't think that's a guy you take unless you're very, very deep, or maybe it's a waiver wire guy. If the Magic happen to have a lot of injuries and he's playing, he's not a bad pickup off the waiver wire.
This is something I always say, Philip, in fantasy leagues, is if someone has done it before, you know that they can do it. And we look back to Nicholson, the last game of last season, he went 18-9 and hit two three-pointers. Mm-hmm. So you know that and that's in 28 minutes, that if he gets 28 minutes, he can do that. He can go 18-9. He can block a shot. He can get two triples. He can do all this stuff. And I'm just going to dig up his stats because I'm pretty sure in 2013-14 there was a time where he had this crazy run where he was putting up. Oh, yes, the first four games of 2013-14, he went 18-4, 13-7, 9-5, 17-11. And not even in big minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 26 minutes. So once you've seen that someone can do it, you know that they can do it again. They're not necessarily going to do it consistently, but if he gets that opportunity, there is stats there for him to produce. He's not going to do a huge amount from blocks point of view, but he can do it. And again, we've seen him do it. So we know that if he goes out there, he can actually do this from time to time. It's not necessarily going to be reliable, but it's a really good point to mention. He's also going to be a restricted free agent as well, so he's going to want to put a good showing in for himself as well when he gets the opportunity to get on the court. Now, he's going to have to battle Dwayne Dedman, Channing Frye, Jason Smith, Aaron Gordon, all these guys to get minutes.
It's going to be tough for him to find minutes this year.
What was that?
It's going to be tough for him to find minutes this year. But
definitely.
You know, if I'm you know, looking for a kind of a deep cut waiver wire guy, and the Magic happen to have some injuries at that position, or he happens to win that battle and get, you know, 10, 12 minutes a game. If I need, you know, points, if I need 3-point shooting, if I need the field goal percentage, that might be a guy I look to pick up off the waiver wire.
Yeah.
I'm not saying draft him. Draft him at all.
No, don't do that. But just keep an eye on this front court. And if guys go down, you know that he's got the ability to produce. I think we've covered pretty much all of the guys on the Magic here. We've touched on Vucevic, Oladipo, Peyton Harris. I think we've talked about all these guys. I think what we need to do now, Philip, is talk about who your favorite player on this team is.
I'm a big Oladipo guy. Okay. I'm a big 10 fan, so I've been watching Oladipo for a few years now. Just the way that he kind of came up through basketball and has kind of really blossomed in the last really 4 years even. It's just been really amazing to watch. He's such, I mean, like the way I describe him to people is he's just smooth. Just talking from a basketball standpoint, the way he carries himself, the way he plays on the floor, he's just smooth. And I just really like the way that he plays. He goes hard at it. He's willing to play defense, which, you know, isn't always something you see in a lot of young guys, and he's constantly improving. Like, he was a nothing recruit coming into Indiana. He really developed into a defensive guy. Then he developed into a first option guy. You know, he's taken the second pick in the draft. I don't think he could have even imagined that when he got to Indiana. And then when he got to Orlando, you know, he really embraced trying to learn how to play point guard, which is not a position that he's ever had to play. I think that made him a better player. And now he's, you know, continuing to improve his offense and his jump shooting. And, you know, it just seems like he's always getting better at something. And that's something I always admire in a player. And he's just just frankly being around him, he's just a good guy to be around. He's, you know, I genuinely like him as a person.
Yeah. You never hear anything bad about him as well. My favorite guy on this team is Evan Fournier, but I love a lot of these guys. I'm a huge fan of Oladipo. Like I said, he's probably my number one breakout guy this season in the whole league. I think he's going to be fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Lord Alfred Payton. Toby Harris, I'm a massive fan of. Nick Vucevic, I like so many of these guys. Aaron Gordon, I wasn't a fan of. I'm coming around on him as well. But to me, it's Fournier, and I can't really explain why. A lot of it is
it's a ponytail. Just admit it.
It's that. It is. There is so much of it. You know what? The other part of it that really attracted me to him, and that in a non-sexual way. But when he played for Denver, he wore number 94, and I went, you know what? I like your thinking. You're going with a completely non-traditional number, and you're going out there and going, I don't care what you guys think, I'm wearing 94. And who's wearing 94? What's happening? And I go, okay, Evan Fournier, you've got a cool hairstyle. You just look, I don't know, suave, and you're wearing number 94. And I was disappointed that when he came to Orlando, he didn't continue with the number 94. Let's get on to a trickier question. Your favorite all-time player on this team?
This is the question I've been dreading since I've been listening to all the other podcasts. You know, I've had some weird tastes in Magic players in the past. Like when I was growing up, I loved all the bench centers. So I'll give a shout out to my guy Stephen Hunter and Mario Kassoun.
Greg Kite
was a little bit before I was really invested in the end of the bench. Greg Kite did show up at a basketball camp I was at in Orlando one time wearing Indiana Pacers gear during the 95 playoffs, and we were not happy with him for that.
Of course he did.
Greg Kite, interesting you mentioned Greg Kite. He actually won a gold medal for the senior division of basketball. Like there's they had like a 50 and over World Cup type basketball tournament down at Disney about a month ago, and the US won. Greg Kite was their center.
You know what? That's why you listen to this podcast, is to hear Greg Kite stats.
Exactly.
I can't believe you had a Greg Kite story. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no. It's the Orlando Sentinel picked up the story, and I did a little research to see exactly what was going on. It was really interesting. You're like, just watch. You know, he's not in shape. Let's put it that way. Sorry to put you on blast there, Greg. His mustache is still in peak,
yes,
peak form. But to get to the question, you know, I think my answer is going to be Tracy McGrady.
Okay.
You know, when I really came in as a basketball fan, not just as like a basketball fan, but when I really started understanding the game, McGrady was the star on the team. He's really the only guy on the team. And the thing I always appreciated about McGrady as a fan was when you went to Magic games, when McGrady was playing, you never knew what you were going to see. You could always see something really, really special. And like, I remember his last year in Orlando, they won 19 games. It was one of the hardest, most difficult seasons. That was probably the worst team in Magic history, to be perfectly honest. And McGrady made each game worth going to a lot by himself. He had the 60-point game. He had the 62-point game, I think, that year. You could always, you know, like literally you'd watch him go down the court. He'd be high-stepping and you'd be saying, don't shoot the three. And he shoots a three and just hits it like it's nothing. He always gave you a reason to show up. You know, frankly, I'm a little disappointed more Magic fans didn't show up during those times. But, you know, the team just wasn't any good. It was just all McGrady. And you know, there is something special about that. That's honestly something the Magic have lacked since McGrady left. You know, I'm still a Dwight Howard guy. I know a lot of Magic fans soured on Dwight Howard. But you know, Dwight was great in a more subtle way almost, because he wasn't putting up huge scoring numbers. He was just a defensive monster. Like when you, like, I don't think the NBA has seen a defensive presence like Dwight Howard.
He was just intimidating.
Yeah, and it takes a little bit more appreciation for him, but McGrady was just so good at just scoring. Like it was just this pure, you know, kind of pickup mentality that I'm just gonna score, and that deserves appreciation. It gave me a reason. You know, a lot of my friends after the Shaq and Penny years ended, kind of left the Magic. McGrady was a reason to stay invested in the Magic. You know, even if the team wasn't good, he was worth the price of admission on his own. And you know, I definitely appreciated that. And I appreciate it more since the Magic really haven't had a perimeter guy of his caliber since.
He had four straight top 10 fantasy finishes from 2000, 2001 through to his last season in Orlando. But his 2002, 2003 season was incredible. He was the second ranked player that year. He averaged 32 points a game. 2.3 threes a game, but 6.5 rebounds and 5.5 assists, 1.7 steals. He also got 0.8 blocks a game. This is a guy that, you know, is scoring that much, but then he's also going down there and giving you a real positive contribution in blocks as well. Now, it's not Rudy Gobert block numbers, but for a guy scoring 32 points a game, it is amazing. Like, that is amazingly high. Guards don't get that. And then he also shot 46% from the field and 79% from the line. He was a positive contributor in every single category. And the only guy who ever does that is Kevin Durant. Nobody else is a positive. Anthony Davis is a great player. He's not a positive contributor in every category. Neither Steph Curry, neither's James Harden, neither's LeBron James. None of these guys are, except Kevin Durant. And he's the only guy in recent memory who's been able to do that. And McGrady was able to do that in that season, produce positive value across every single category. And that is something that's really hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the circumstances of T-Mac's career, the injuries, the fact that he played on a Magic team, you know, the prime of his career essentially was played on a Magic team that didn't go anywhere. People forget it was a legitimate debate between him and Kobe Bryant who was better. Like, it was a legitimate debate. Like, I remember being on message boards at the time, like, defending Tracy McGrady like crazy, and everyone saying, yeah, no, McGrady's better than Kobe. Like, it was a legitimate thing that we discussed in the mid-2000s.
Let's talk about my favorite player all time on this team, and it's probably going to bring some tears to the eyes of some people who are older fans, maybe like myself, when I talk Penny Hardaway, because he was fantastic, but injuries, just much like McGrady, really, but Hardaway felt like he just got cut short a lot earlier, and he never really hit his prime, even though he did have three straight 20-point scoring seasons, you know, two straight 20 and 7 assist seasons with two steals a game. He never really got to hit his full peak or his full prime due to injuries, and it's obviously disappointing for Magic fans, because, you know, Penny and Shaq, that combination was, it basically set the league on fire. They were like, okay, this is the new young stars. This team is going to, you know, take over. We know what happened with Shaq, the trade. We know the Penny injuries, and it cut down a lot of what the Magic could have. But Penny was fantastic to watch. You don't see many point guards at that height play in the NBA, be able to do what he did: score, assist, rebound, defense. He did pretty much everything. But unfortunately, is it like McGrady, the injuries really cut down his career. And by the end of his career, he couldn't even come back to being anywhere near what he was at the start. And that's really, really disappointing. With so many of those guys through the 90s that had injuries just destroy what could have been great careers. Hardaway, Grant Hill's another one as well, who, you know, was awesome. And we never get to see what they fully can do due to injuries. And it's a lot of Orlando Magic guys I'm talking about here whose careers were really affected by injuries. But Penny Hardaway is the guy that I really loved watching, especially that time where I was growing up and developing my NBA fandom through those early 90s when I was 13, 14 years old. Penny Hardaway was the guy for me. Shaq was huge, massive fan of Shaq in his rookie season, breaking those backboards. I show them to my son now and he goes, oh, can I watch the video of Shaq breaking the backboard? And this is, you know, we're talking 20 years on. I want to watch the video of Shaq. And that's something that's going to forever stay in, yeah, NBA memories, even of people who didn't actually see it happen live. But to me, it was Penny.
I remember, Penny was my favorite player growing up. I loved Shaq too. Like, you know, I understood, you know, I was, when the Magic made the finals, I was, I think, 6 or 7 years old. So, like, I understood that Shaq was this all-important piece. But, you know, when you're 6 or 7, you care about what the guards are doing more. You know, you don't really pay attention to the post-game or have as much appreciation of it. So Penny was my favorite player when I was, you know, really just growing up and getting introduced to basketball. And, you know, I loved everything about Penny, you know, just from little Penny to, you know, Shaq was great too. I loved everything about Shaq. But, like, Penny was just this all-encompassing force on the team for me, and I know for a lot of Magic fans. And yeah, I've always kind of said that, you know, if Penny had that injury that he had maybe a year and a half later, microfracture surgery would be, you know, perfected a little bit more, and, you know, maybe they could have salvaged his career. He suffered from some really bad timing, and unfortunately just he tried too hard to come back. And, you know, I think he got a bad reputation kind of for being a little disgruntled there toward the end of his Magic career and not doing enough to come back when, you know, frankly, he was trying desperately to save his career, I think.
People love these sections of the podcast, Philip, where I go through these old players and talk about it. Mm-hmm. And as we're talking, this is nothing Magic related, but someone's tweeted me in, and it's from, I don't even know, OMG, it's Dax, okay? And he says, look up all-time Nuggets. This is Nuggets stuff for fans. He goes, look up Fat Lever from 86 to 1990. Oh, yeah. So Fat Lever in 86 to 1990. Now, with Fat Lever, he's a guard. He's not a big guy. In 1986, he averaged 8.9 rebounds, then 8.1, then 9.3, then 9.3. He had seasons of 19-9-8, 19-8-8, 20-9-8, and 18-9-6.5. And over two steals in each of those seasons. What is happening in the NBA?
That was with the Nuggets in the early 90s, right?
It was 86 through to 1990.
Okay, I wonder how much the Paul Westhead effect is in there. Because remember, like in the early 90s, this is when Scott Skiles had his 30 assist game.
Yep.
The Nuggets were playing at this ridiculous pace.
Weren't they scoring like 150 a game?
They were just trying to score as many points as they could.
Yeah. But that's crazy.
That's how Scott Skiles got 30 assists, was the Nuggets just kept giving him possessions to get assists on.
Well, there's the magic tie-in with Fat Lever stats. But Fat Lever, apart from having one of the best names, that is insane.
Yeah.
Four seasons in a row of over 8 rebounds as a point guard. That is crazy. If that happened today, my head would explode. But that's a great pickup from our OMG at Stacks. Thank you. If anyone else has got any old stat lines they want me to look up, please let me know and I'll look that up and discuss them on other podcasts. But that's out of control. I never would have found that Fat Lever one. So thank you for that. Philip, I think we're done here on this podcast. Any other last minute magic thoughts you want to get out there?
I just want the season to start. It's been too long of an off season. I want some basketball, man.
coming soon. At least preseason's coming soon.
Hey, I got one week from Friday is media day for the Magic. So training camp is right around the corner.
Awesome. Now let's remind everyone where they can now find you and your great work on the internet, Philip.
You can find most of my work over at Orlando Magic Daily and follow me on Twitter at @OMagicDaily. I also contribute to Hardwood Paroxysm. And if you like a little Northwestern Wildcats football, I work for Northwestern.247sports.com.
I'm not sure there's a massive crossover between Magic fans and Northwestern Wildcats football,
apart from you.
Really? Okay. Okay.
We're ranked now.
What, did
with ranking.
Did you win this week?
We beat Eastern Illinois, but we won't care about the opponent. We just shut them out, which is an accomplishment for us. We sometimes struggle with those FCS teams.
Yeah, I've got a bit of an affection for Northwestern. I think they've always, maybe not the last couple of years, I've always thought they were a little bit of that sort of underdog story you could try and root for and get behind. So yeah, and is this the season that Northwestern's going to make the tournament in basketball?
I think we're probably still another year away, but it could get close this year. I think, you know, Chris Collins has done not to get too deep into Northwestern talk, but Chris Collins has done a very good job with that team so far. I think they're definitely, the recruiting's obviously been built up, and I think they're trending in the right direction. I think within the next 2 years, they'll break that streak finally.
That'd be awesome for just basketball fans in general, just to see that happen, because it has been a long time coming. Philip,
it hasn't happened yet.
No. Once it's going to happen eventually, we think.
Eventually.
But you say that about lots of things. You can talk about the Cubs in baseball. Yeah, it's going to happen. Hasn't.
No, that's never going to happen.
I can talk about my Australian football team, who we haven't won a premiership or a title since 1954, and that was our only one. And yeah, eventually it's going to happen. Maybe, but who knows? Who knows if I ever will. Yeah, it's maybe. We'll see. Things could happen, but they could also, history could always repeat. Philip, it's been great having you on. Thank you for coming on.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Everyone, make sure you're following Philip on Twitter and following me at @RedRock_Bball. Don't forget to check out the Hardwood Paroxysm Pod Center, to check out the other podcasts over there and all the work on the website. And of course, Basketball Monster. Go ahead and check out Basketball Monster. Get yourself a membership if that's something you're interested in. There are a stack of tools there, draft trackers, projections, articles by myself. Go over there and see what you can see what sort of stuff you can have a look at, because there is a stack of stuff on Basketball Monster. It really is a fantastic site. Don't forget to leave a review for the podcast. You know that helps me out tremendously when you do that on iTunes. So thank you to everybody who has done that. And I would love everybody else who hasn't done that yet to just, if you've got 5 minutes spare, just to jump on iTunes and leave a review. It is super helpful. Philip, enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And to all our Jewish listeners, Shana Tova.
Okay. You were saying something on Twitter about what's the celebration at the moment?
It's Rosh Hashanah today. Okay. It's the Jewish New Year.
Okay, well,
Everyone's in synagogue, hopefully with their earbuds on, listening to the Red Rock Basketball Podcast.
I'm sure that's not frowned upon at all. But I approve. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.